from the creators of Relevant Magazine. This is the Relevant Podcast.
It's Tuesday. It's April 7th. The year is 2020. You're listening to The Relevant Podcast. I'm your host, Tyler Huckabee. I'm coming to you from Nashville, Tennessee. Meanwhile, down there in Orlando, Florida, he's trying to bridge Breaking Bad all night, but couldn't remember his password. It's our illustrious producer, Chandler Strang.
Hello. Did your parents kick you out of their account, Chandler?
They did. Gotta get my own now.
And up there in Loveland, Virginia, he's working on a new issue of his Breaking Bad fanfic, which has been going on since well before a self-quarantine began. It's our friend Jesse Carey. Hey, Jesse.
Hello. It's called Jesse and Uncle Jesse. And Jesse Pinkman teams up with Full House's lovable Uncle Jesse for some roommate hijinks. And it's a radical change in tone for both shows. And I'm afraid the world just isn't ready for what transpires in this apartment in a very expensive townhouse in San Francisco. So
I don't take either of you guys for being big in the fanfic community. I'm not myself a very active member of the fanfic community, but I know enough to know that it is like an extremely dedicated community of people, you know, the people who like have these like very long message boards in which they go on and on about their shows and movies and create whole new characters, and they ship new romances, and it can get pretty intense sometimes, I think.
I mean, I don't understand the world of fan fiction, but I certainly have no beef with it.
I don't want to get on their bad side. I hope nobody hears that, because I'm worried I'd be fanficked into some like villain role on some OC fanfic community, and it would ruin my online life.
Okay, here's the thing about fan fiction. Like, it's a unabashedly like nerdy thing to do. You know what I mean? I don't mean that to disparage it, but I'm saying that even people who write fan fiction are probably like, writing fan fiction's the nerdiest thing I do. So here's my question to you guys. What is your shamelessly most nerdy thing that you do that you still like to do? What do you have? Like, it might not be as nerdy as fan fiction, but I feel like the other thing too is like during this quarantine that we're in, a lot of people are just indulging, like really, you know, just they're just exploring hobbies. Chandler, you kind of got out in front of this by embracing plant life early on and just diving disturbingly deep into the world of potted plants well before coronavirus forced you to stay inside. So I'm assuming that's your most nerdy thing. Do you have anything else that is super nerdy?
I mean, I still play Pokemon Go, so I think that's probably nerdier than
that is. Yeah, plants. You win.
We need Pokemon Stay for these times. Yeah. Pokemon come to you.
Yeah, there's hiding little, in your house somewhere.
A little virtual box with a string and a stick. You put some sort of bait under there.
Tyler, I know you're a big comic book guy. You host a comic book podcast. You're heavy into, I think you have numerous comic book pieces of apparel, numerous comic book tattoos. True. You even have a C.S. Lewis inspired tattoo.
I do.
What do you consider your nerdiest indulgence?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of contenders. There's a lot of possibilities. It's a tight race. I mean, but I think we're talking like stereotypically nerdy, like what nerd can mean a lot of, but like the word nerd now just means kind of right? Because people are like, you can be sports nerds, but you know what I mean. We all know what I mean.
You know what kind of nerd I'm talking about. I'm talking about not the charming. I'm talking about like, it's like, okay, this is pretty dorky. Like, I mean, there's no shame in it. There's no shame in it. I'm just saying.
If I was ashamed, I mean, there was a time to be ashamed of it. When you were like in high school.
Yeah. Now nobody
cares. You had to bury it a little bit.
Like I said, in quarantine, like every like, you know, video I see on like Reddit or like Twitter or even like TikTok is people just getting heavy into weird crafts at their house. It's like, hey, I built this, you know, almost life size replica of my own house with Legos. Isn't this cool? And the response is always, no, it is not cool at all. Like, you know, like people are just taking up weird weird hobbies because they're stuck at home trying to find stuff to do.
I was walking the dog and I walked by a guy who lives just a couple houses down from me. So we don't know each other well, but I know who he is. And he was just out there with his bow and arrow. Either this is his new hobby or he knows something we don't know. But he's...
he's straight up going Hunger Games status out here.
I think he is thinking about like, where is pandemic going to be a year from now? And he's just trying to get ahead of the curve there. Not only has it
gone to the point where you need protection, it's like, well, I need to go primitive here. I mean, it's you know, all modern
electricity.
Yeah, all modern conveniences are off the table and we're going back to primal warfare. And he busts out so he's just out in the front yard with a bow and arrow.
Front yard. He had a target set up.
Okay.
By himself.
I don't know what his lot looks like, but I can't imagine that he can't set up the exact same setup in the backyard. And here's my theory. He's sending a message to the neighborhood. Like, Hey guys, just want to let you know, if it goes down, there's a bow and arrow guy in the mix here. You know, I always say this. I've said this before. I'm gonna get in trouble for this, but I don't really care. If people are hanging out and there's a slightly older ponytail guy in the mix, that night's getting weird. Okay. If there's a ponytail guy in the mix at any situation, you're not sure what's going to happen. I feel like that with the bow hunter on the block. Like, hey guys, just want to let you know, the guy four houses down, he's got a bow. He's a bow guy and he's out there shooting arrows in the front freaking yard. Okay. You don't know if that guy's in the mix. You don't know, but I will say this. No one's messing with your cul-de-sac. If that guy's on there, no one wants a part of it because all of a sudden somebody comes to cause trouble. All they see is like, what is that light? What is that light shooting through the sky? Why is it getting bigger? And the guy is shooting flaming arrows from his yard. You know, he's not, you know, okay. If you're the type of human that buys a bow and arrow during a pandemic, during a quarantine, and you're in your front yard shooting so that all your neighbors see you shooting a bow and arrow, you know, he's thought about, I gotta at least try one flaming arrow. I gotta do at least one. I just want to try. You know, that crosses somebody's mind.
I think that's
probably
true. And I think to your point, Jesse, if this is what he's doing in the front yard, then God help us with whatever's going on in the backyard.
Like one stray arrow could do a tremendous amount of damage. You know what I mean? Like it does not seem like a front yard hobby.
The other medieval warfare tools he might be working on, and then like, is there a full on trebuchet in the back that he's preparing for? Is he working on the moat?
I was walking through the neighborhood one day and I saw a guy like did like chipping golf balls in his front yard, and that made me a little uncomfortable because I'm like, hey man, one of those gets away from you, that could break a window. If I saw that same guy shooting a bow and arrow in the front yard, like that just doesn't seem, it seems it, not even like the homeowner situation, like association would have an issue. It just seems like all it takes is one sneeze at the wrong time. He draws the bow, he achoo, and it just goes. It's like do you guys ever sneeze while you're driving down the highway? It's terrifying. It is a flash of terror. It is a split second of my eyes are being closed, my body's jolting, and I don't know what this car is doing. Think about that with a bow and arrow in your hand. He could take one sneeze and one just flies off into the distance, and he just like looks at it fly and he's like, all right, time to pack it up for the day. Like, I'm not comfortable with that.
I do like how it's extremely, it shows kind of America's place in the world, because you see these videos in Italy, people singing on the balconies, playing their violins or whatever. It's very heartwarming. What unites us is bigger than what divides us. Over in England, people doing workouts together. You have like the coach who's doing the jumping jacks, and then you pan around and you see everybody else on their back. Meanwhile, here in America, bunker down. Every man for himself. When things go sideways, I've got the bow and arrow ready to go.
Weapons. Yeah. So Tyler, do you have any nerdy confessions? Bow shooting is up there.
There was not. What if it was my bow and arrow the whole time? No, just making it not to be this weird.
and then you just said, and the big revelation was my bow and arrow the whole time, and you're going to regret every word you said. And right then, an arrow comes shooting through my window.
Call me a nerd one more time. One more time. Gary, flaming arrows. You can't even leave your house to deal with it. I think I still once a week went, don't go anywhere, but went into comic book shops and picked up like 5 or 6 comic books every week. And walked out with them.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
It wasn't even an online
I didn't even know there were still comic book shops.
Well, there are now, but there were until very recently. There were. So that was that'd probably be my big one. It was, I went out to Rick's Comic City. It was about a 15-minute drive up the way, and it's run by the people you would think would run a comic book store.
Yeah.
Like if you saw the people working there, or if you saw them out and around, you'd be like, "Yeah, hey, probably works at a comic book shop or something." And he does. And I think that was that's pretty nerdy. That's like, that's commitment. That's not just you like the movies. That's like you go to the source material and you have to go. It's a commitment. You have to go once a week because these keep coming out. So you have to keep picking up more of them.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, if you saw someone with a bow and arrow slung around their back at the comic book shop, that'd probably just be no big deal. They'd be like, oh, that's about right.
Because you got the cosplayers, which is kind of the fanfic of the comic book world, the people who, which is not something, I don't do that.
But if there's like a dude in there that's straight up going Legolas, you're like, oh, that's not a big deal. Like, it's just Tuesday at the comic book shop.
It seemed worse.
A lot of people are going to hear, well, obviously Jesse doesn't have any nerdy thing. I mean, Jesse and nerdy are kind of antithetical. Like, I mean, what could Jesse possibly do? But I will say this. We already did our Tiger King take. I feel like we've talked about it too much, but the only thing I will say is when I was watching it, And he revealed how much he's selling baby tiger cubs. Before I watched Tiger King, for people that somehow don't know, it's a show about people who raise exotic animals, particularly big cats in captivity like tigers, and they sell them, and it's kind of a shady world. But anyway, they talk about the business model of it a little. And before watching Tiger King, if someone was like, hey, a white tiger cub, or just a tiger cub, just a cub that in a couple years will be a full-size tiger, like the one in The Hangover, like a tiger. Like, if you're telling me in my mind, how much would it cost if you want a tiger, like a pet tiger, just straight up, just to buy one? I'd be like, oh, man, 10, 12, 15, 20 grand. I don't know. I mean, seem like pretty exotic. You know, Joe Exotic's selling those things for $2,000. That puts it well within like the range of what a lot of people could do. You know, like a lot of people could probably go out and sell $2,000's worth of stuff and trade it in for a tiger or two. Now, I'm not saying I was considering buying a tiger. It seems like that hasn't worked out well for anyone in that series. It seems like once you make the decision to be a tiger person, your life is on an irreversible trajectory, right?
Like, and who's more? And tigers are the least of your problems. You become part of that whole community.
Exactly. You are now part of a world where it's Hotel California status, where you can check in whenever you like, but you can never really leave. That's what happens as soon as you buy a tiger. You're part of the tiger community. But I'm not going to lie. It briefly crossed my mind. It briefly crossed my mind of like, dude, it would be so cool to have a tiger. And, you know, maybe that world was meant for me. Maybe that this is what I've belonged all these years, is part of the tiger community. I feel like I could slide right in. I really do. I feel like I could slide right in. And if they all weren't like, most of them seems like weird dirtbags, but I would still slide right in. And I feel like I would find a community there. That's all.
Yeah, kids and stuff. Like, it seems like that would be
they would be raised tiger people, Tyler. You saw Chandler, both you guys saw the documentary. All the good tiger people were raised tiger people. They were like playing in their cribs with live tigers, like in B-roll. That's just part of the tiger life, Tyler, is that children are raised. You raise them in it. They wrestle the tigers as children. It just happens. It's unnatural and weird, but it does happen, and that would be my nerdy indulgence this lifetime.
Well, we do, in addition to all of this, it doesn't stop here. We've got a great show lined up for you today. Actually, we're being joined by, this is going to be fun. We got Gavi joining us, Christian MC, producer. He produced, what did he do? Andy Mineo's You Can't Stop Me. He's produced a lot of Lecrae's song. He's got a new album coming out called Heathen. Had a really great conversation with him. Can't wait to share it with you guys. Before we get to that, we're going to be talking about slices. So stay with us.
Watch me go zoom, zoom. Baby girl, how do I look in my do-rag?
listening to Dragon Ball Durag by Thundercat. The beginning of the podcast, you heard Breathe by the Born Ruffians. This episode is brought to you by Bombas. Working out is hard. It's always been hard. And even when it's easy, it's still pretty hard. Bombas socks can't really change that, but they can make it more comfortable. So if your resolution this year was to get fit, start by getting socks that can keep up every step of the way. You can do a lot of different things to stay active. So Bombas made a lot of different performance socks designed for everything from running to hiking to cycling and more. Whether you're very into sports or planning on getting very into sports, Bombas can help with performance socks and made specifically for basketball, tennis, running, golf, and more. They're made from a lightweight polycotton blend, which means no matter how hard you're working, your feet will stay cool, dry, and comfortable, never sweaty. Bombas socks provide you with support in places you didn't even know you needed, like your arches. Each sock is built with a special arch support system that's supportive but not too tight, like a nice little hug, but on your foot, a little foot hug. Constantly pausing your treadmill to adjust your twisted up, bunched up socks is enough to make anyone ready to quit. That's why Bombas are designed with left-right contouring and a Y-stitch heel, so they stay perfectly in place. Oh, I never noticed that annoying little toe seam that most socks have, that little ridge on the top? Bombas got rid of it. It's gone. It's donezo. It's just smooth sailing all the way across the top of your foot. And did you know that socks are the number one most requested item in homeless shelters? Bombas socks were created to change that. For every pair you buy, Bombas donates a pair to someone in need. So go to bombas.com/relevant today and get 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/relevant for 20% off. bombas.com/relevant. Okay, time for our weekly look back at our favorite stories at the intersection of faith and pop culture that came across our desks this week. It's time for
Slices.
Jesse, what do you got?
All right, I have a twofer today.
All right.
And one people probably already know about. And I think it's actually a really cool thing. I think it seems like something that's sort of an anecdote to a couple of big swings by celebrities, but would have been recognized as pretty significant misses, well-intentioned to lift the spirits sure. of a quarantined America. And the first one was when Gal Gadot rallied a bunch of her famous friends. We've talked about extensively on this podcast, and they collectively sang John Lennon's song Imagine. But it included people like Will Ferrell. It was just like a giant list. It was like a who's who like text thread that decided this was a good idea, and it came across very kind of weird and tone deaf because these celebrities are quarantined in their giant mansions with closets full of supplies and toilet paper, doing just fine while many people in the country are very worried every day about this pandemic, and it just didn't come across right. Like James Corden did one the other night where he had a handful of guests on, but I don't know. Just something tonally about it just didn't necessarily.
It didn't land.
It didn't work. It felt weird. There wasn't the big charity tie like we're used to in a lot of stuff. It was like, what is this really for? There has been a couple examples of this gone right. Like I think John Krasinski's web
people
show
liking,
that he,
people are liking John and sometimes Emily. His wife, Emily Blunt, joins him. Yeah, I haven't watched it yet, but I've heard people are fans.
Because it's good news. He's focused on only good stuff. And there's a degree of self-awareness to it. You know what I mean? Steve Carell was on. But this one I'm kind of excited about. It's happening on April 18th, I believe is the day. Let me double check. Yeah, April 18th. And it's called One World Together at Home. And it's going to bring together, I think this is really cool. I've always kind of been fascinated by this world and the relationship with these people. It's going to bring together Stephen Colbert, Jimmy Kimmel, and Jimmy Fallon. And it's in it's going to be produced in partnership with Global Citizen. And it's an effort to raise money for good causes. you know, like I think at this point, like Tim Cook has already pledged like $10 million to the to this effort, and it's going and they Jimmy Kimmel announced that they've had calls with corporate executives about donating. They have a really interesting list of performers who are going to perform on One World Together at Home on a lot of 90s names, a lot of like early 2090s names, Alanis Morissette, Billy Joe Armstrong, Chris Martin, Eddie Vedder. David Beckham will be on there, but then there's also some contemporary artists like Casey Musgraves, John Legend, of course Billie Eilish. I feel like you can't have a special right now and not include Billie Eilish.
Billie's in.
And I thought this was cool. I thought this was a great idea. I'm actually excited to tune in. I think it's gonna hopefully. I've missed the collective viewing experiences that sports and things like the Oscars gave us, you know, where, you know, even though we're in a very segmented time of, you know, cultural consumption, like we watch Netflix all the time and everyone kind of watching their own thing at their own house in their own time. There was something fun about everyone watching the same thing together that we've kind of lost with the loss of sports and live events. So I think this is cool. But I wanted to, Chandler, I sent you a clip. And I feel like this clip is indicative of most of my professional interactions these days. So most people right now, you know, Tyler, you know, you, me and Chandler, we have a kind of a leg up because we've been recording our podcast remotely for years. So I feel like we are masters at remote meetings, you know, whether it be Zoom, whether it be Skype, whether it be Google Hangouts, you know, it doesn't faze us. We're just as good like this as we are in person because we do it so much. But a lot of people are very uncomfortable and it's every Zoom meeting that you might as well tack on an extra 15 minutes for everyone to get their tech set up, for everyone to mention how weird it is to see the background of their house, for everyone to be like, all right, who's wearing sweatpants? And everyone kind of stands up and, you know, someone has to do like the stand up of shame on the webcam and reveal that even though they're in a button down dress shirt, they're wearing like SpongeBob pajama pants. You know, like we go through this song and dance like every day now. But to make this big announcement, okay, they've had calls with 70 corporate executives, tens of millions of dollars have already been pledged. It's an unheard of now effort uniting three of the biggest, you know, brands in media, CBS, NBC, and ABC. It's this cross-platform event unlike anything that's ever gone on in history. You would think it's pretty organized. And to announce the event, Lady Gaga, who helped organize it, FaceTimed Jimmy Fallon, but evidently did not realize that this was the actual FaceTime to announce the event. She went through the same Zoom awkwardness that we are now experiencing every day. So as Jimmy Fallon is holding his phone up to the camera, Lady Gaga has no idea what is going on and is just openly wondering if this can all just be rescheduled. Chandler, do you mind playing a clip for us?
This is a big, we have a big maybe announcement that you're going to say tonight on our show.
No, I can't, Jimmy. I can't talk right now. It's I'm really sorry. It's just like a really weird time. Hello?
Yeah.
Jimmy?
You're on.
I can't see you. Am I on TV?
Yeah.
Hold up.
Sorry, you're on TV. I apologize. Wait,
hold on.
But what's the big news?
But it's somewhat comforting to know that even an event that takes an unimaginable amount of organization, you know, could even fall prey to the awkwardness that video calls and, you know, trying to navigate all of your meetings and stuff digitally present. It was a great equalizer. It's, you know, like I kind of appreciated the profound awkwardness of it, because who's ever been in the Zoom too, where there's one person that doesn't realize the camera's on, you know what I mean? And as soon as the meeting starts, you see them take out their headphones and walk away for a sec, you know, and it's like, oh, Carol doesn't even realize she's, you know, she's broadcasting all the, or someone's like picking their nose or something, you know, it just highlighted, look, this is an equal opportunity awkwardness, you know?
I agree. I think I think that it's one thing, because these are people who are very used to the screen obviously, like these are like Lady Jimmy Fallon has probably spent logged in more hours of screen time in the last decade than almost anybody.
Right.
Yeah. He's up there with the most of them.
Yeah.
But it's one thing to have all these cameras and these people. But it's another thing when the screen is just your computer, that's there's no amount of training or prep that can get you ready for that. And I was even talking to a pastor yesterday about it, because these are people who, you know, obviously up in front of people a lot, very comfortable just talking and keeping things going and keeping the energy going. But it's because he's been preaching over Zoom for the past three weeks. And he was like, and he was talking about how strange it is to just have no idea. Do people care? Is this resonating?
Well, that's to me, that's the least awkward thing about the Sunday morning. So, because our pastor too, like pastors across the country, they're doing the same thing. You know, they're doing like a little, you know, digital live thing. But the most awkward thing to me, my pastor's a pretty funny guy, you know? And it's really weird.
It's a different time for the jokes.
And he's like, all right, I hope everyone, is wide awake this morning. And I hope, I can't tell though, if there's less people sleeping through my sermon as there is on a normal Sunday. And then there's just like this just suspended, like, all right, if you turn your Bibles to me, let's just abandon the jokes here.
Without the laugh track, so there's just the blank spot, and you're like,
And you realize, like, were their jokes ever really funny? Like, because it is really awkward and painful to watch, to listen to a black light
for unfunny comedy. But all of a sudden,
you realize how many of these pastors, and listen, I think my pastor's really funny. I'm not referring to him. I'm talking about other pastors out there, but you realize how many are, you know, their humor rides the coattails of their charm. You know what I mean? Okay, they're a charming person, so I'm going to laugh at what they say, and I'm part of this like big communal room, and everyone's laughing, so I will join in the laughter, and I would trick myself to thinking what they said was funny. And you realize this: a lot of pastors, when you put them on Skype, are profoundly unfunny. It's like when you hear those stories about comedians and they audition for SNL and it's just like Lorne Michaels and the head writer standing there and no one in the room is laughing. And it's like, okay, your comedy has to, that's it, man. It is a vacuum. Mm-hmm. It's either funny or it's not. And a lot of pastors right now are being exposed, not for heresy, not for moral failings, but not being that funny on Zoom. And that itself is a sin.
That's it. It's disqualifying.
I think a lot of denominations need to have some very difficult conversations once the dust settles on all this. Okay, I have one more, and I have something that I found pretty surprising, because it debunks a theory that's been going around for a while. And that is one of the lighter side. I mean, this pandemic, the coronavirus outbreak has been terrible, but one of the lighter things that I think, you know, people have managed to make fun of is the toilet paper thing, right? Mm-hmm. Plenty of good memes, because there is like this toilet paper shortage, and everyone trying to get toilet paper. It's hard to find. I went to the grocery store the other day. I did the whole thing, you know, by the way, going to the grocery store is an awkward experience right now. Because everyone's looking at each other, like, you know the rules, like 6 feet, man. You know the rules, like don't roll up on me, don't roll up. You know, like everyone's kind of.
You don't have 6 feet in the aisles. So you have to be very. It requires a degree of civility that Americans aren't used to.
Exactly. And so, but if you go, like the racks for the toilet paper are gone. Chandler, I want to ask you. I mean. What's your theory of why there's no toilet paper out there?
I don't really know. I guess because if you're going to be home, you need toilet paper in order to be comfortable, because that's not something you necessarily need.
Are you lying on the toilet paper, Chandler? If you want to be really comfortable, you just have to wrap yourself in toilet paper. And Charmin, 2-ply, wrap it around your body and just lie there and then throw it all in the garbage can. No, a lot of people assume...
when people start panic buying something, then everybody else starts panic buying it. You know what I mean? And then it, mm-hmm. it just
well, that's the theory. Spirals. That's a theory. That's a theory up to now. Tyler, I think you probably read the story too. The theory was that our second biggest crisis, the toilet paper shortage, was because people were hoarding toilet paper. Right. They heard there was going to be a run, and they're like, "Dude, we got to buy some toilet paper." Well, Rich Herbert recently did an interview with a local news station in Grand Rapids, Michigan, WOOD. And I actually saw different researchers pointing this out too. But Rich Herbert, like I said, he is the CEO of Clean It Supply, a cleaning supply retailer. So he's got some inside knowledge on what's actually going on here. And what if I told you that there is another reason for America's toilet paper supply being completely deplenished? Tyler, have you read this?
No, this is news to me, but I'm on pins and needles.
Okay, a lot of people say it's because of hoarding, of people, like you said, Chandler, panic buying, like, oh no, all the toilet paper's running out, I gotta buy. That's actually not the problem. That's actually not what's going on here. We need to quit toilet paper shaming people. People need toilet paper, and that's okay. You should be able to buy as much as you want.
Sure.
The problem is America's bathroom habits have changed very dramatically.
Okay.
So what I mean by that is people are home more, so they're not using the bathroom at work, sure. They're not using the bathroom at church, and they're not using the bathroom at restaurants and stuff. You know, they, you know, most of those places or school, you know, they're home. You know, those places usually supply toilet paper, and it's usually that like industrial stuff. That stuff that's, you know, it's just a giant, it's not a roll, it's a giant wheel of basically cardboard, basically construction paper on a thing. So because they're home more, that means they need more home supplies. And because so much bathroom use happens outside the home, they're forced to buy more toilet paper, not because they're hoarding, but because their habits have been forced to change. Everyone's working from home. Here is some, I want to read a little bit from this piece from WOOD TV in Michigan.
Okay.
He said, on average, a person uses the bathroom 5 times a day, and 2 or 3 times of those used to be at work or school. That's as many as 15 times each week, which for a family of 4 would be 60 or more flushes at home each week. Okay. Herbert has seen this impact on his company's sales. Prior to the crisis, 80% of our sales were to businesses and 20% were to consumers. But in the last 3 weeks, this has flipped. We are now 80% to consumers and 20% to businesses. So the market has totally shifted. It doesn't have people to do with hoarding. It's got people, it's got reasons to do with people's lifestyle changing. However, Herbert thinks that there will be a strain on the supply chain. This is scary because they can't just ramp it back up. Most of these toilet paper factories are cranking as much TP as they can, you know, like they're already maxed out in the TP department. This guy thinks the supply, because of the lifestyle changes, it'll basically last for the next 3 months until we're back using the bathroom at work and school. Then the toilet paper supply will be, you know, will be limited for the next 90 days. But it's not because of hoarders. So you got to quit shaming those people.
Okay.
That, because they could be like Chandler. They just find comfort in rolling themselves in roll after roll after roll of valuable toilet paper. So interesting.
But can't it be a little bit of both? Like, don't you think it could be like, it's not necessarily a binary here?
It could be. I'm just telling you what. The numbers don't lie.
That's fair.
Yeah. I mean, it's completely flip-flopped their sales. You know what I mean? It's a disruption to the market. You know, demand for something, you know, just, you know, far outreached the supply. But I think the surprising thing is the demand is for different reasons than we initially thought.
I think that's probably true. That actually hasn't been like of the things that we've kind of been like, oh, we're running out low on that. I don't know. Maybe we were hoarding beforehand. They just didn't realize it. So we were like uncommonly ready for all of this. I like a comfy bed of 2-ply toilet paper when I go, sue me. So I've always got plenty on hand. I was born for this.
I bought 2 things at the outbreak. 1 was truckloads of toilet paper. 2 was bow and arrows. And I have a lot of them. Yeah.
The hard part is arrows are limited. So you have to like go find where you shot the arrow. It's very frustrating.
Very careful. Actually, supply run on those too. Yeah. And which is concerning for a whole new set of reasons.
All right. So my slides this week, have you all been on social media enough to see the pick three memes going around?
Yeah.
The little time wasters thing. So I'll explain to you the basic concept here, which is that, and I believe it actually started with an account called Light Camera Pod, which is a film podcast.
Yeah.
And the guys behind this basically put together a list of 9 movies and said you can only pick 3 of these movies, and wanted to see what the winners were, like what would be the most. So I'm going to send it, Chandler and Jesse, I'm going to send this to you, this list to you that they sent, texted it over to you. So the ones that they started off picking were, and this started trending on on Monday night. This started trending on Twitter, or Sunday night rather, it started trending. The 9 movies were Goodfellas, Pulp Fiction, Inception, Infinity War, The Dark Knight, Empire Strikes Back, Space Jam, Toy Story, and Jurassic Park. If you could only pick 3 of those, but Jesse, do you have your answer? Do you know which ones you'd go with?
So I'm assuming the game is you can only pick 3 that you know, the other ones would be swiped from existence.
You're primed through, swiped out of existence. You never had them anymore.
I would probably go with, looking at this list, I would probably go Jurassic Park, because I wouldn't want to just think of the implications for me. I would want to think about the implications for future generations. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What world are we leaving behind for Gen Z?
And I feel like this isn't even close for me. I think I would go Jurassic Park because it is a classic. You know, everyone remembers the first time they saw Jurassic Park.
Great
it still
adventure.
Holds up. It's a great franchise. You know, I would choose Jurassic Park. I would choose The Dark Knight because I think it's a masterpiece. And then I'd probably go with like Toy Story, because even though I don't really care about Toy Story, I feel like that's another one that's regarded as like a modern children's masterpiece. And I feel like there could be a world, like I recommended Inception a few weeks ago for a rewatch, but I feel like if there was no Inception in the world, I don't feel like the world changes at all.
The world
like,
would spin on without Inception.
You take Toy Story out of the world, I feel like, you know, there's this, you know, sort of innocence and charm that's lost. And dude, I know you're going to be not like this, Tyler, but Infinity War, honestly, you could roll the events of that film into the beginning of Endgame and be just fine. We've got enough Marvel movies. We don't need, they're all just one long movie anyway. If you just told them, hey, you got to make it 3 hours shorter over the course of 20 movies, they'd figure it out. Space Jam is hot garbage. I rewatched it. I loved it as a kid, and I was so confused by it as an adult of some
really
of the creative decisions that were made. Goodfellas and Pulp Fiction, again, those are movies that I'm glad exist, but I'm not going back to them all the time. It's not like I'm never in the mood to be like, oh, you know what, I want to watch a violent mob crime film that's 3 hours and gonna give me nightmares. And the Empire Strikes Back, I don't care about Star Wars. Tyler, what's your 3?
So the 3 that I think, and I went back and forth on this a little bit, but I'm actually pretty close to you, Jesse. I think that Toy Story for like the kids, for the culture needs Toy Story, whether regardless of like and that jumpstarted the whole Pixar thing. And you can't lose. You can't. It feels like very indicative of a huge part of the last 20 years of cinema. I think Jurassic Park should be in there too. And I know how much I'm known as a superhero guy in the podcast, but I think I would go with Empire Strikes Back because I feel like overall Star Wars has the more like valuable cultural footprint, even if the franchise is extremely up and down in terms of quality. I think Empire Strikes Back is a good movie and I'd stick with that one. I'm kind of with Goodfellas and Pulp Fiction. Good stuff, but they don't need to be. They're not indispensable to where to like our
there's
societal
a lot of
goings
there's a lot
on.
Of movies that accomplish the same things they do.
Yeah. If you're like white film bros will be able to find other ways to scratch that itch without movies like that. Right?
I'm pretty sure Martin Scorsese and Quentin Tarantino have made numerous films each, and they're all kind of the same.
Chandler, do you know what you'd go with? Do you have a take?
I'm pretty sure Scorsese is going to use "Give Me Shelter" by the Rolling Stones in a lot of movies. Okay. You'll be just fine. Chandler, what would you pick?
I would say maybe Goodfellas, Dark Knight, and Toy Story. I agree with both of you on Toy Story for sure.
Yeah.
But well, just for variation, you know, Goodfellas.
It, I will say this, the quarantine thing, Tyler, has upped Twitter's meme game.
Oh, for sure.
Well, like it's meme game is what I mean. Like there, of course there's the, you know, anytime whether Tiger King dropped it or in the middle of a quarantine or not, people would have some Tiger King memes, but there are a lot of random games you can play just by perusing memes right now. You know, there's these pick three games, you know, like, I see a lot of people kind of doing the, oh, what's your third to last text you sent plus mm-hmm. the street you grew up on is your new band, you know, like
three people on your phone are the ones you're stuck in quarantine with. Who are you going to survive or not? Like stuff like that, which is fun.
Yeah, it's fun. These guys, I like this kind of stuff. You know, it is
too.
Fun.
I do
yeah.
too. So this meme, that was the original one, but it spawned a lot of variations. Some different there's variables out there, and you can go look around. There's different like BuzzFeed and places are compiling lists. This is one that I wanted to send. I wanted likewise y'all's take on this particular variation of the pick three that I just texted over. And as y'all see, this is restaurant edition. This is what I'd call casual dining restaurant edition.
All right. This is a murderer's row right here. Give us who's on here.
Yeah. It's Sophie's choice across the board. Like if Sophie had nine babies instead of two, it can't be done, but we'll do our best. Top row, Red Lobster, Olive Garden, Cracker Barrel. Middle row, Chili's, Applebee's, and the Cheesecake Factory. Bottom row, TGI Fridays, PF Chang's, and Buffalo Wild BW3s.
Oh man, this one's tough. I think I know my picks. Chandler, this is your lane. Pick your three, man. Everything else is going away. Obviously Chili's is going to
Chili's and Olive Garden. Those are the go for sure. I would say for the third one, Buffalo Wild Wings, just because I like wings.
Dude, Chandler, I had the exact same picks. Like, nice. if there was no more Red Lobster, I would never know the difference. I didn't even know Applebee's was still in business. So there we go on that.
Applebee's really fell off the. I feel like they had like a 3-1 lead in the 90s, and they just blew it. Because you don't hear about Applebee's anymore. They used to be the one. They used to be the kings.
Listen, they're quickly on the path to becoming as irrelevant as a Ruby Tuesday. Who is even on this list?
Didn't even make the list. Brutal. Although I probably would put them in over PF Chang's. PF Chang's just feels like an outlier here for some reason. I don't know why.
Yeah, I'm not a big PF.
It's totally fine. It's totally fine.
It's average, you know, mm-hmm. it's overpriced, you know, Asian inspired cuisine. Like it's totally overpriced. Like there's way better options out there for that. Like Applebee's is close to being the Ryan Steakhouse here. Like I remember when that was around, you know, like Sizzler. Like sorry Applebee's, you had your chance. Tyler, what are your three, man?
I think I'm actually gonna, this might be a hot tip. I will go Chili's because those chips and salsa, you gotta do.
Yeah.
Instead mm-hmm. of Olive Garden, I'm gonna throw in a Cracker Barrel because the breakfast is solid. And I need something for breakfast too. And, but I will keep BW3s for that. I feel like this is breakfast, lunch, and dinner for me. You got Cracker Barrel for breakfast, Chili's in the afternoon for a little afternoon pick me up, and then finish the day out down to Buffalo Wild Wings.
Yeah, that's quite the day. Quite the day. Really living the American dream here.
That's going to be day one out of quarantine for me, actually.
Cracker Barrel is disgusting. Everything's covered in weird gravy. The only reason to go to Cracker Barrel is to play those fun golf tee games that are just sitting out on the table. You know what I mean? Like where you jump around. Yeah, this is okay. Out of the gate, Red Lobster, Olive Garden, Cracker Barrel, Chili's, Applebee's, Cheesecake Factory, TGI Fridays, PF Chang's, Buffalo Wild Wings. You have to pick the one after church lunch spot. What takes the crown? Because that's a whole nother animal. Like I go to restaurants for different reasons.
A different situation.
The after church mm-hmm. lunch spot. If you had to pick, where would you go? Chandler, why don't you go first? I think I know what you're going to go.
Well, if I'm choosing, it's Chili's. My parents used to. They like Cracker Barrel a lot, so that was
their after church spot.
Yeah, that was like the growing up going to the restaurant after, or Longhorn Steakhouse, but Longhorn's on the side.
I like that your parents just get after it after Sunday morning. Yeah. Like this is stick to your bones, man. This is meat and they're going to Longhorn Steakhouse at like 11:30 on Sunday morning. I appreciate that.
Every week. That was the real go.
I didn't even know a Longhorn Steakhouse opened before like 3 p.m. You know, that's just me. Tyler, what would you choose?
I think I got to go Olive Garden.
For the after church. The, Olive Garden seems like a dinner place to me, man.
I don't know, but it feels like it feels classy. Like we just fed our souls. Now let's feed our bodies. It feels very apropos.
That's why Cheesecake Factory to me is the
Cheesecake Factory.
It's the king of after church lunch because the menu is gigantic. No matter who's going, they're going to find something for everyone. You know, like no one's going to complain. I don't like going to Cheesecake Factory for dinner. It feels like I could probably find a little bit better, like than this big chain that's, you know, painted like a faux pastel, you know, like Venetian, you know, knockoff of the Venetian Hotel in Las Vegas. Like, you know, why are these giant columns in here? You know what I mean? Like, what are they going for here? Like, what is the decision here? But I'm not going there for dinner. It seems like the perfect after lunch spot, after church lunch spot, Cheesecake Factory.
And now I'm just sad that this is probably the only places that are going to be open. Well, this is said and done. Like, these are the places that have enough cash in the bank to
this is the most soulless places on earth.
This is what we're looking at. Okay, and one last one that I brought for you. We've done the film bracket. That was pretty easy. Restaurant bracket, obviously, a little more complicated.
With an after church lunch spinoff.
The after lunch, the spinoff. Yeah, we made it even tougher. Here's what I'm going to do, and I think this is going to hit. This is going to be up at least your alley, Jesse Chandler. I'll see where you're at on this one.
All right.
Last one was a little more Chandler than Jesse. We'll see how this one does.
Yeah.
We're doing mid-aughts emo band bracket round.
I looked at this. I saw you posted this last night, and I thought long and hard about it. So
this is a T-Huck original, actually. Yeah.
I saw you post this last night, and I actually gave it a lot of thought. Why don't you read through the choices, and then
I'll read through the choices.
We can have Chandler go first.
And I've actually got. I might be able to guess yours, Jesse. I'm not sure. I might be able to guess.
I want to hear the guess. I think you could nail it. But let's hear yours.
All right. So top row. May is the Everglow. The Devil and God Are Raging Inside of Me by Brand New. Where You Want to Be by Taking Back Sunday. Second row, Transatlanticism by Death Cab. Something Corporate, Leaving Through an Open Window. Dashboards, The Places You've Come to Fear the Most. Bottom row, Bleed American by Jimmy Eat World. We're All the Time by Thursday. And Emotion is Dead by The Juliana Theory.
All right, Chandler, you go first, man. I want to hear your three. You can only keep three.
Well, I went through a brief emo phase in like middle school, you know? So okay.
This would have been middle school for you.
You don't need to qualify. You don't need to qualify. Me, we all did.
I would say the top row. Just
top
May,
row.
Brand New, Taking Back Sunday. Those are the...
Okay.
Those
are the
three. Of that bunch, those maybe Thursday, but I didn't really listen to any of the other ones.
Yeah. I don't feel like I don't feel like Thursday holds up as good because they really went for that whole like screamo type of, you know.
Right.
You know what I mean? All right, Tyler, what's your three?
So my three, I think I'll go Brand New. Well, I think I'll go Brand New, Death Cab, May.
Okay. Fair enough.
I feel bad leaving Dashboard was definitely the most important to me at the time, but I'm 35 years old.
Hey, there's no shame, dude. Don't play that.
It's definitely the most that age, like the lyrics, the everything feels like so.
That's fair.
It's not a lack of love for it or a shame or anything of it. Now I'm just saying, like, what still feels applicable.
All right. So Tyler, what do you think the three that I would pick is?
All right. So I think Jimmy Eat World is a given.
Is a lock. Yep.
Yeah. And then I'm gonna throw for you Brand New. And then I'm torn because I know that May is like your scene, like those guys are like from your area, right?
We used to go to shows together. So I still know some of those cats, yeah.
But I feel like you've talked about Juliana Theory too. I'm going to go Everglow.
Oh man. You should have gone with your instinct. My three, cause I thought about this last night, was Jimmy World, Juliana Theory. I love that album, The Emotion Is Dead. And I'm going to go Dashboard, man.
Like, oh, you're going to go. Okay. All right.
You know, like the Taking Back Sunday, the brand new, like those albums, and even the Death Cab have sort of a darkness to them, that and Thursday as well, which I appreciate. But if I'm going back to those, I want the Heart on Your Sleeve. I want the Bleeding
you
Heart.
Want the Teenage.
I want Perks of Being a Wallflower. I want like the cheesy corn. Like that era was great because it was a lot of the music, you know, when you strip it down, was kind of corny. Give me the corniest stuff. Give me Jimmy World. Give me Juliana Theory. Give me Dashboard. Like, give me the sugar, man. Give me the candy, you know? Like, I don't want the meat. I want the candy, dude. You know? So
it was an interesting era in retrospect, because it all sounded like there was very much a similar vibe. Like these, I pulled a lot of these because they sort of represented different streams of everything, but there was a lot of really hard to distinguish bands in that whole scene. There was,
this is my scene. I could do a whole separate pod just about these albums and that scene. Like
that's not
a
bad idea.
There was this book that I read at the time that was out. It was written by like a spin writer called Nothing Feels Good. That was like a deep dive into this scene. But I mean, I spent a good majority of ages 16 through like 22 going to all of these bands' concerts and things. Like I was heavy into this scene. Like it was like concerts multiple times a week.
I would still go see any of these guys and have seen some of them recently. We were going to go, obviously canceled now, but Dashboard was going to do a show here in Nashville it's been like 20 years.
It's still a big fun sing along.
And I would go, absolutely. It was a fun scene.
I recently in the last year drove to go see Jimmy World. Like I still love checking these bands out, you know?
And I don't totally understand why, but it seems like there was some sort of weird overlap with a certain part of the youth group church set. And I don't know where. Somebody who knows more than me should try to explore some of that a little bit. Because some of these guys, like I think some of the May guys had some Christian, like,
I mean,
talked to us. I know back in the day they talked to Relevant. That was pre my time.
I mean, I noodle on guitar. I'm not like I don't consider myself a musician, but me and Dave from May had led worship together at like church youth group, you know, like, you know, they used to practice at the church. You know, I know the Juliana Theory was on like Tooth and Nail Records, which is, a lot of these bands were sort of Christian adjacent. Chris Caraba from Dashboard Confessional was the lead singer of Further Seems Forever. Tooth and Nail, you know, Tooth and Nail Records was like a, you know, sort of like a Christian-y indie rock label. And you know, Chris Caraba from Dashboard was on there. Jimmy World, we had an early issue of the magazine where Zach Lynn, the drummer, sat down with David Crowder. There was a lot of Christian adjacency.
There was
in
a lot
world.
Of it, and it was interesting because it didn't necessarily, there was a lot of it. It was an interesting time. And I wish somebody smarter than me could make, feels like our lane, but I don't really know where it comes from. I don't understand the adjacents or the neighbors that all those had, but it was interesting. Maybe somebody else out there knows better than me. If you got this story there, then let me know. We can talk about it. It would be an interesting deep dive to take some time.
There were a lot of former youth group kids on that scene.
There was a lot of former youth. They had their skills were honed in the basements, in church basements.
Yeah, exactly.
Playing a bunch of Sonic Flood covers.
Yeah, exactly. Playing that Daryl Evans album that everyone used to, you know, I'm dreading my sorrows. You know, somehow they just tuned their guitar to drop D and started, you know, crying their hearts out about their girlfriends and made emo bands. But hey, I'm not complaining.
I needed it.
Very formative.
You knew how to cry about girls in a way that I didn't. And I appreciate All right, well, that'll wrap it up for
Slices.
Stay tuned when we come back. Gavi joins us.
Climate change, don't need lames. I need God. I'm exhaust. I'm glory to God. Shooters aim. I got range. What are the odds? Devil go. We not the same. No, we not. Climate change, don't need lames. I need God. I'm exhaust.
You're listening to Climate Change by today's guest, Gavi, featuring Akleso and Wordsblade. Is there something that interferes with your happiness or is preventing you from achieving your goals? BetterHelp Online Counseling is there for you. Now you can connect with your professional counselor in a safe and private online environment. It's so convenient. You can now get help on your own time and at your own pace. You can schedule secure video or phone sessions, plus chat and text with your therapist. Licensed professional counselors are available who are specialized in depression, anxiety, sleep issues, grief, family issues, and much more. BetterHelp has 3,000 licensed therapists across all 50 states. And of course, if you're not happy with your counselor for any reason, you can request a new one at any time, and everything you share is confidential. And it's a truly affordable option. The Relevant podcast listeners get 10% off their first month with discount code Relevant. So why not get started today? Go to betterhelp.com/relevant just to fill out a questionnaire, help them assess your needs, and get matched with a counselor that you'll love. That's betterhelp.com/relevant. Well, Reach Records' six-time Dove Award-winning artist Gavi is prepared to ruffle some feathers with his third full-length album, Heathen, set to release on April 10th, 2020. The EDM hip-hop artist has been known to push boundaries in music, as evidenced by his two RIAA-certified gold records for production, Anomaly from Lecrae and You Can't Stop Me from Andy Mineo. And as a solo artist, shown in his debut album, We Belong, and sophomore project Panorama. Heathen will be no different, as Gavi aims to push against the Christian culture and hopes to deconstruct unhealthy cultural norms. I love this conversation with Gavi, and I don't always do this, but I was interested in hearing his origin story, kind of how he got involved in music in the first place, because he actually has a pretty good story. I'll let him tell it to you himself.
I got into the music industry when I was in high school. I heard about this guy named Lecrae. He came out with this song called Jesus Music. And I was like, yo, this is really cool. At that time, I was producing music in my closet of my parents' house, making beats for a lot of guys in school. My life at that moment too was really just like changed by Jesus. Like, faith actually became my own. So I was like very much in like Christian music, hip hop. And at that time, I got to sneak into a bunch of Lecrae's, concerts, in the back of the room. And I would give him CDs. I'll give him CDs of my beats. And yeah. And then by the third time that I gave him CDs and I snuck backstage, he grabbed me really quick. He was like, bro, I've been trying to get your contact information for the longest. Every time you give me a CD, it's just blank and no information. And from that, I realized, I was like, oh, business. You have to be smart about this. It's not just about music. Give contact information. And yeah, from there, they took me under their wings.
Heathen obviously is sort of a controversial word. It's a pretty bold choice for an album title. So I was curious about what the reasoning was there. Why name an album Heathen? And he talked to me a lot. He's done a lot of research on it. He had a lot of interesting things to say about what the word heathen means and how we've sort of adopted that word for our own culture. He unpacks a lot of that in the album, which I hope everybody here listens to. But then he told me why he decided that this would be a good choice for an album title and what he hopes to communicate to the church in particular.
Why is it so important to me? And I was like, man, I really want to impact one. People that feel like they are too far from the gospel, the sinner, right? They have access to this gospel. I'm not better than them. I'm actually a sinner myself, right? And then two is culture. Man, that's been a big part of my story because I am Latino. And stepping into this world, being a Latino or any different cultural background, there's a lot of things that come with that. And it's a beautiful thing and it's also a scary thing at the same time. How do you navigate through that? So I wanted to impact in that. And then biblically, Gentile, just, hey, let's talk about the Bible. Let's talk about church culture. Let's talk about what this means. So yeah, all those reasons, I was like, this is a great, well-rounded word. It's very complicated, but it's something that I feel we are as human beings. We are complicated. We are defined in so many different ways, and that makes us special, right? But ultimately, leading them back to Jesus with all of this. It's not me championing like, oh yeah, hey, we're all sinners. It's more of like, man, I know once you do something different or when you are vulnerable, you're going to be probably called a heathen. And let me share my personal experience of what that looks like.
I was curious about his thoughts. I think that most people in the church, you know, they want to be accepting. They want to be open-minded, but something seems to get in the way and hypocrisy and judgment kind of becomes a default position. So I wanted to hear some of Gavi's thoughts as somebody who's experienced a lot of that in his life about why that happens and maybe how we can do a better job of being an accepting group of people. Here were his thoughts on that.
I think that's what happens in certain settings, certain stories of people. I'm not saying this is all, because there's a lot of layers to this. But I think what happens with Christians is there's a self-righteousness that happens at times. You forget the actual gospel, and you forget that Jesus actually loved people rather than pointing at them so much. And yeah, there's a lot of areas in our Christian culture that we've made a lot of traditional things that has made it sometimes difficult for non-believers or Christians that have been Christians for a while to even open up about themselves. You know, growing up in a Hispanic church, I'll tell you this, the biggest thing that happens that I see consistent, not all, but the biggest thing that I see consistently is, you go into church and it's like, hey, Brother John, how are you? Oh, everything, the victory of Jesus. But literally they know deep down inside, man, I am dying so bad. I wish I could tell you, but I'm so scared of being vulnerable to you because I already know how this goes. I've seen so many examples of people put on discipline or something, or you're going to be looked upon like, oh, this person can't really serve. You know, we're not going to love upon him right now. And sadly, that's what happens sometimes. But yeah, again, I'm a strong believer in church. Church has saved my life. So I'm not bashing. I'm just saying this is a reality that does happen.
That was Gavi. Heathen is out on Friday. I hope you all check it out. You're listening to Colder and Closer by Tops. All right, time for another round of our quarantine recommendations for what we're listening to or watching or enjoying while we're on lockdown here. Jesse, this was your suggestion. You suggested TV shows, but specific episodes that hold up really well. Just going back to specific apps in your shows that are worth a revisit, standout apps.
Yeah.
So I'm curious what you picked. I don't even know what show you went with.
Okay. I went with, and it might be a little obvious, but I feel like it is the ultimate comfort food, especially when you're having a rough day in quarantine and you know, maybe experiencing some anxiousness. I feel like nothing's better than The Office. It's always funny. Mm-hmm. You've seen every episode, but there's something very charming. They still hold up very well. So I picked three with an asterisk episodes of The Office that if you're looking to revisit The Office and just need to mellow out and you're like, okay, I need just to laugh and not think about anything. Here are my three picks. The first one is kind of cheating, and I would save this till like a later selection, but it's Niagara Part 1 and 2, the Jim and Pam wedding. It hits the notes. It has some of the most cringeworthy. I like episodes of The Office where they get outside the office. Like I think it really helps the comedy sometimes, but it hits all the beats. It has Michael being as cringy as he ever has, like trying to force his way into like the wedding party and doing the toast. It hits its sentimentality notes in a really effective way. It gives you everything you want from all the characters in really funny ways. It's a two-parter. It is It was executed so well. The bar was extremely high for how they're going to do the Jim and Pam wedding, and they nailed it. The office writers didn't always stick the landing when they did. It was good. It hits all the notes, and it's still a really, really funny arc. So I feel like it's
kind of the spiritual series finale. Yeah. I know it kept going for another few seasons, but in a lot of ways that represented the end, of the best era of The Office. And I love
it. Totally agree. So Niagara part one and two. Number two on my list is the episode called Money. It's in season four, and it was post writer strike. And that's, so a lot of sitcoms had gone on hiatus, and to make up for the hiatus, a lot of shows were doing like 45 minute episodes. Instead of the standard 22. So The Office did a handful of 45-minute episodes. Money is one of them. It has a lot of classic moments, including Michael Scott declaring bankruptcy by walking into the office and simply going, "I declare bankruptcy." And it has like Oscar going through his finances. It has Michael working a second job at a call center. It has, again, so many funny beats. You get to see like really sad and interesting parts of Michael Scott's character, and also ones that are just really funny. And as the B plot, that's the one where Jim and Pam go stay at Dwight's bed and breakfast on his beet farm, which is another, you know, has some interesting run-ins with Cousin Moe's. So again, another classic. And finally, the episode I consider the ultimate episode of The Office, and proof to my theory that when you get them outside of the office, the comedy is sometimes even better, is The Dinner Party. It is the train wreck of all train wrecks. It is an episode where Michael cons Jim and Pam. Dwight ends up showing up with a date. Andy and Angela are there, and they're at Michael's condo. The moment where Michael shows off his flat screen TV, which is about 14 inches that he mounted himself, it is still one of the funniest episodes, and it is the best blooper reel in the history of The Office. You can watch it on YouTube. The blooper reel for The Dinner Party, the outtakes, is as good as the episode itself. Those are my three picks. Tyler, what do you got, man?
Okay, so I decided to go with my comfort food, which has always been the case and is more the case now. Quarantine comfort food. I go back to New Girl a lot because New Girl has always been there for me, and we've been watching it here at the house, and that still holds up and has some of my favorite cast chemistry of any sitcom, really. So I'm going to recommend three episodes from that. The first one, season two, episode 15. That's Cooler. That's the one where they introduce the True American Game, which is one of the legacies of New Girl, is the game that they play when they're bored in the show. It's a completely baffling set of rules. They do montages every time they play, and the game gets more and more complicated and confusing. But it's never not funny to watch and try to figure out what the True American Game that they play, that the roommates play in the loft. And it also features that first kiss, the Nick and Jess first kiss, which it's a great romance. It was a great chemistry that held up for the entirety of that show's run. The next one is season four, episode 14. That's the Swoot episode, which is where Schmidt and Nick come up with an idea for a suit made out of a sweatsuit, so you can be both relaxed and professional at the same time. That would play very well in 2020. I think that invention's time has really finally come, and their pitch on that is very, very good. And then the last one, my favorite episode. It's actually, these are all from season four. Plan on that, but yeah, strong episode of television. Yeah. Episode 17 is the spider hunt. The main threat is there's a spider in the loft, and most of the episode is about the team trying to find it and kill the spider. But it also features a great subplot about the bar that Nick owns, trying to decide if they should have a popcorn maker in it or not, which features one of the great riffs on who's on first in modern television that I'll just laugh at the clip. I'll just pull it up on us on a bummer day and watch the 2 minutes of it online. And if you watch it, you'll know what I'm talking about. New Girl in general, I'm a kind of a weirdly big fan. I feel like it is for me what a lot of, like Seinfeld or Friends is for a lot of people. This one just landed with me the right way. That was the right time for it, I suppose.
Well, you're here to hear, folks, if you're feeling stressed about what's going on in the world, about your toilet paper situation, and you can't get out to the Cheesecake Factory to drown your sorrows in a meatloaf, fire up some New Girl. There we go.
Hey, well, I think that'll wrap it up for this week. Many thanks to Gavi for joining us. Gavi's new album, Heathen, comes out this Friday. Can't wait to check that out. Also, thanks to Bombas. Go to bombas.com/relevant today and get 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/relevant for 20% off. Bombas.com/relevant. And also, thanks to our friends at BetterHelp. Go to betterhelp.com/relevant. Fill out that questionnaire to help them assess your needs and get matched with a counselor you'll love. That's betterhelp.com/relevant. Also, make sure you check out all of our podcasts on the Relevant podcast page. I think that'll take care of it. I hope everyone's getting set for a safe and sane week. And we'll see you all on Friday. I'm Tyler Huckabee.
I'm Jim String.
I'm Jesse Carey.
Thanks, everyone. See you this weekend.
Thank you for listening to the Relevant Podcast. If you like what you heard, be sure to leave us a review on iTunes. Check out other shows from the Relevant Podcast Network in the podcast section at relevantmagazine.com. And while you're there, browse exclusive podcast merchandise at our online store. Make sure to subscribe to Relevant Magazine. Info is available at relevantmagazine.com/subscribe.
Strike a bolt of lightning into me.
I gotta at least try one flaming arrow. I gotta do at least one.
Relevant Podcast Network.